welcome back to the program. George Steinbrenner is perhaps the best-known owner in the modern history of sports. He's been twice suspended from the game of baseball, and up until the time of his death was the longest-running Yankee owner and also the most financially successful, having turned his original investment of $8.5 million into a multi-billion dollar behemoth. With the passing of George Steinbrenner today, we're going to take a look back at his remarkable life, his remarkable tenure as owner of the Yankees, with my guest Bill Madden, who for 30 years has covered the Yankees for the New York Daily News. He's the author of several previous books. He is the only one to have succeeded in putting together a biography of George Steinbrenner. It's entitled Steinbrenner, The Last Lion of Baseball, and it is my pleasure to welcome Bill Madden here to the program. Bill, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
For a long time, the Steinbrenner family and Steinbrenner himself wouldn't even consider cooperating with anybody on any kind of a biography. You got some cooperation. Talk about that first.
Yeah, well, as you said, through the years, George has been very reluctant to do his own biography, autobiography, and they pretty much could put the kibosh on anybody who attempted to write a book on George, both the family and the Yankees. But the family and the Yankees kind of loosened things up a little bit. At least they did so for me, because they knew that I had a relationship with George, and I guess they figured they had their best shot with me as far as writing a fair and objective biography of the guy. But as I told Hal Steinbrenner, who was the last person I interviewed, I said, Hal, this is not going to be a hit job on your father, but it's not going to be a Valentine to him either. And the fact was, you know, you can't change history. George was what he was, and one of the things I told HarperCollins, my publisher, when we first started out in this thing, I said, the hardest thing about trying to sell this book is trying to sell it as nonfiction, because nobody's going to believe half the stuff that's in this book. But I swear it's all true. Everything was double-sourced in this book.
When one looks at Steinbrenner as an owner, what he's done, what he's changed, talk first about what Steinbrenner brought to his ownership of the Yankees that was fundamentally different for baseball.
Well, as I pretty much outlined throughout the book, this is a very complex human being, Steinbrenner. He was part genius, he was part lunatic, he was part benefactor, he was part bully, he was all of these different facets of his character, he was probably the most dynamic owner there's ever been in baseball. There's never been an owner who's had more impact on the game and on his particular team than Steinbrenner has. And it began in the very beginning when he bought the team from CBS in 1973, he and his syndicate, which included about 13 other guys, for $8.8 million. George's out-of-pocket investment was $168,000. He had to borrow the rest for his 11% share of the team, which is at the time the largest individual share of the team. He now owns almost over 60% of the team, and it's now worth $1.5 billion. But starting off, George was a visionary when it came to free agency, which was just becoming mid-70s when George bought the Yankees. And the rest of the owners in baseball looked at free agency as the ruination of the game. George saw it as his vehicle for restoring the Yankees to their world championship status that they had enjoyed through most of the 20th century. When he bought the team from CBS, they were at one of their lowest ebbs. George had promised the fans of New York that he would get them in the World Series within 5 years. Well, he did it in three. They were in the World Series by 1976, and because the reason they were was because of free agency. Catfish Hunter, being the first kept free agent, he signed from the Oakland A's when Charlie Finley, the owner of the A's, there was a clause in Catfish's contract that Finley didn't live up to, and he was declared a free agency. George won that one, and then he went after Reggie Jackson and got him, and Goose Gossage the year after that. And through all these marquee free agents, he restored the Yankees almost instantly into championship status.
What kind of relationship did that create between Steinbrenner and the other baseball owners?
Well, that was always a very acrimonious relationship. George was George, and the other owners were the other owners, and they all resented George, and they all thought George was the proverbial bull in the china shop when it came to everything in baseball, spending money. I mean, obviously George had a lot to do with the fact that the contracts and the player salaries went through the roof through free agency. I mean, George, the mechanism was what happened, was what created the salary, but George took advantage of that mechanism. And then the other thing was, when George was suspended by Faye Vincent back in the late 80s, the commissioner Faye Vincent, because of a payment that George had made of $40,000 to this guy Howie Spira, who was an admitted gambler, to dig up dirt on Dave Winfield, and most notably on the Dave Winfield Foundation, which George was required to be making these payments to after he signed Winfield as a free agent. Anyway, when he was thrown out of the game for life, as it turned out, he wound up getting out of that situation, and that's another long story. But when he was thrown out of the game, the rest of the owners were glad to see him go, and they had no sympathy for him. But as it turned out, they realized that during that whole process that Faye Vincent really deprived George of his rights under the baseball constitution. And they realized that there but for the grace of God go them, as far as Faye Vincent was concerned. And so it turned out his fellow owners kind of helped him get back into baseball because they saw that as a vehicle for getting rid of Faye Vincent. And when he did get back into baseball, the minute he got back into baseball, he did this Adidas deal in which he signed up the Yankees to $1 million Adidas deal for all this signage around Yankee Stadium, and immediately got in hot water with the other owners again. And when they told him he couldn't do it, he turned around and sued them. So in answer to your question, his relationship with the other owners was never any good.
Beyond the free agency and changing the economics of baseball, talk about Steinbrenner's micromanaging of the team and his relationship with his own coaches.
Well, that was George's manic ownership is what really makes this a compelling story because, again, there was no other owner like George when it came to just everything involving the way he ran the team. And it started with, of course, the fact that he hired and fired Billy Martin five times as his manager. And Billy Martin was just one of over a dozen managers that George had through the years in which he recycled them and brought them back. And it was the same thing with his general managers. I mean, George was one of these owners. He was a hands-on owner. He just couldn't leave the operation to his baseball people. There were only a few people who he ever trusted throughout the entire his entire reign as Yankee owner to baseball people who he trusted as far as letting them run the team. One of them, whom was Gabe Paul, his first team president and general manager, who he had brought over from the Cleveland Indians with him to run the team at the beginning. And Gabe Paul put up with George for 4 years, and then he had to get out of there. So it got so bad with George, he was willing to go back. He was welcome going back to the Cleveland Indians, even though they had no money and were going to finish last every year.
One of the things that you had as source material were these diaries, these audio diaries that Gabe Paul kept. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, that was this was like a bonanza for any reporter. I was a little concerned about how I was going to handle the early years from 73 to 77 because I didn't join the Daily News until 78, which is when I was around the Yankees on an everyday basis. From 73 to 77, I was with United Press International, and so I was only around the Yankees, you know, periodically. And I knew Gabe Paul, but he was never very forthcoming about his years with the Yankees, and he passed away in 1998 without ever having written his memoirs. So I was a little concerned, as I said, as to how I was going to handle this because he was such an important part of the Yankees. Anyway, I had an interview with his son, Gabe Jr., who told me himself that he couldn't help me either because he wasn't around his father during that time. But he said, I'm going to go back to the house and I'll look and see if he's got any papers or anything else lying around the house that might be able to help you. Well, a few months later, he calls me and he says, you're not going to believe this, but we were cleaning out my father's house and we came across this carton. in the corner of the garage that had been there for 35 years. And inside the carton were a bunch of cartridges, tape cartridges. He says, I put them on a machine, and they were very fragile. But it turns out, he said, his father had made tapes. Every day after work, I guess frustrated and exasperated with working for George, Gabe, God bless him, opened up a bottle of scotch and vented it into a tape recorder. And this is priceless stuff that had been lost forever. And I thank Gabe Paul Jr. so much for giving me access to these tapes. There was over 100 hours of them. He only gave me selected access to them. But what's there is just really makes the first part of this book, because it's lost history that never would have been reported before.
And what did that tell you? What did those tapes tell you about Steinbrenner that maybe you wouldn't have known otherwise?
Well, I always suspected that he was an impossible person to work for, but Gabe Paul was one of the most solid executives in baseball. He was just one of the great executives in baseball, and when you listen to these tapes, and here is Gabe Paul, who was more knowledgeable about the game and probably than anybody else around that time, and he's every day he's frustrated with George interfering with things. One point in time during the 1976 World Series, the Yankees are in the process of being swept, and Mickey Rivers, their leadoff hitter and one of their best players, was in a terrible slump that had actually begun in the beginning of September when he just kind of shut it down. And the source of Mickey's problems were, they all agree, was his wife, who was constantly calling the Yankees and complaining about the fact that Mickey's paychecks were winding up at Aqueduct Racetrack instead of in the family house. And so Mickey was always looking for money, and the wife was causing all his problems. And George comes into Gabe in the middle of the World Series, and he's complaining about Rivers, and he says, I want you to trade him. And Gabe says, you can't trade a player in the middle of the World Series, George. And so Steinbrenner says, well, what are we going to do about that? I know what the problem is. It's the wife. I know what I'll do. I'll get the black Muslims on this. And this is in the tape. And I'm listening to this, and I'm saying, this is... And Gabe says, black Muslims, this guy'll stupid nothing. So the only problem with all of this was there was no second source for this, and Gabe just moves on. But he's complaining about George is going to get the black Muslims and take care of Mickey Rivers' wife. Well, it turned out, I later found out from another executive, that George, in fact, in 1973, when he first bought the Yankees, was constantly complaining about the graffiti and all the crime around Yankee Stadium. It was kind of a wedge to get the city to get him a new stadium. And somebody from the black Muslims came to him and said, look, for a $40,000 stipend, we'll be more than happy to take care of, provide a little extra security for you. And this remained on the books. Apparently, for this guy who took over as business manager, it's like 20 years later, and he looked at the budget and he said, $40,000, black Muslims. It goes to George, and George says, never mind, just pay it.
Talk about the relationship between George and New York. In many ways, it's hard to imagine Steinbrenner existing anywhere else other than in New York.
Well, that's the great irony of this story, because it almost happened that George wound up with the Cleveland Indians, his hometown team. He had a deal to buy the Indians in 1972, and at the last minute, Vernon Stouffer, the frozen foods magnate who owned the Indians, reneged on the deal. He thought that George was trying to steal the team from him, and he wasn't satisfied with the sale price. And so George was terribly disappointed, and he told Gabe Paul, who was the general manager of the Indians at the time, and helped broker this deal that fell through. He says to Gabe, if you ever hear of another team for sale, let me know, because I'd like to have you with me. Well, a year later, Gabe Paul calls George and he says, you asked me about another team for sale. Well, I know of one. And George says, what is that? And he says, the New York Yankees. Well, George was, he couldn't believe it, that the Yankees could be for sale. And, of course, Gabe explained to him that CBS wanted to get out of the baseball business. The Yankees were an embarrassment to them. And so George was able to get the team at a pretty good price. And he clearly was made for New York, George. I mean, he's a P.T. Barnum. I mean, he believed one of his limited partners was Jimmy Niederlander, the theater magnate in New York. Mm-hmm. And it was Jimmy Niederlander who told George, this is a city of stars. You got to have stars, George. And that was George's modus operandi as far as signing free agents, big-name free agents like Reggie Jackson and Catfish Hunter. And from there, George was George became bigger than the Yankees. I mean, the central character in all those great Yankee teams was George. He was everywhere in New York, and he was this colorful Barnum-like character that really put the Yankees on the map as much as their championship teams did.
In many ways, he had to be as bigger star, if not bigger, than his players.
Well, yeah, he was. I mean, George, there's no question about George's ego being as big as the Yankees themselves. And, you know, he was constantly in the papers all the time. He was a horrible loser. Every time they would lose a game, George would be venting to the writers. And I often tell people that I wonder what my life would have been like had George not bought the Yankees in 1973, because if nothing else, he was never dull.
What was his relationship like with the players?
Well, it was kind of a love-hate thing with the players. Obviously, they loved the way George paid them, but George's attitude was, because I pay you, I have a right to rip you when you don't perform for me. And so that was a situation that went on throughout all the, especially the 70s and 80s, when the Yankees were in, even though they were winning, they were also in constant turmoil, and that turmoil was all created by George, who was constantly complaining about his players' performance. And of course, the players, you know, being human, they didn't like that. And the papers, when they wake up the next morning and they pick up the papers and they'd see where George ripped them for making an error or not performing in one way or the other. And so, as a result, if you talk to most of the Yankee players, they'll tell you that George was the greatest owner I ever played for. But at the time they were playing for them, they didn't necessarily feel that way.
How did he look upon other sports where there were salary caps?
Well, I think actually George would have probably welcomed a salary cap in baseball, even though he would have gone right up to the limit every year on it, because towards the end, the last few years before George really got his health really declined and he gave up the day-to-day operations of the team, I think George felt like because there wasn't a salary cap in baseball, this monster that he had created was starting other teams to get into the bidding, and all it took is one team to make an outrageous bid for one of George's players, and then all of a sudden he would have to pay him a lot more than he wanted to. A classic example of that was Bernie Williams back in the late 90s. Well, Bernie was one of the Yankees' star players, and he became a free agent, and George was going to hold the line on what he wanted to pay him, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Boston Red Sox came up with this outrageous offer for Bernie Williams, and George was about to let him go, and Bernie called George up himself, and he said, look, I don't want to go to the Red Sox. I want to stay here with the Yankees. If you'll just show me some appreciation, some love, make me an offer that is just comparable to their offer. And so George, he bit the bullet and basically signed Bernie Williams back for a lot more money than he would ordinarily wanted to give him.
Not surprisingly, George's personal life was as tumultuous as his baseball life. Talk a little about that.
Well, I dwell on that. I wouldn't say dwell on that, but I deal with that in the book because again, this, you can't change history. And George and his wife, they would go at it in public quite often. And Gabe Paul tapes early on, as Gabe is complaining on his daily diary, tape diary, he says, he's talking about how George will not let Joanne, his wife, up into the Yankee Club. And at the end of his venting about this, Gabe, because Gabe was caught in the middle of all this spousal dispute, and Gabe says, for all I know, he's got a broad up there. Well, it turned out George did have a woman, friend Barbara Walters, who was part of his inner circle, and they were, for lack of a better word, an item. Now, whether or not they were an intimate item, they both denied that, but the fact of the matter was they were very, very good friends. And there is a point in the book where I talk about in the 2000 World Series where, even though they may have denied that they had a relationship, Barbara Walters was in George's private box at the World Series in 2000 at Shea Stadium, and at the last minute, Joanne Steinbrenner decided she wanted to attend the game. And when Georgia's security people heard that Joanne was coming up from Tampa to attend the game, there was a frantic rush up to the box to get Barbara Walters evicted from Georgia's box.
For Steinbrenner, what was the highlight of his ownership of the Yankees?
Well, I would think the highlight was probably, I would think, 1977, when they won the World Championship, Billy Martin, and they'd been through so much with Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson, and there'd been feuds and fights all that season. They were that was the year that they became dubbed the Bronx Zoo, and George was in the middle of all of that. But the bottom line was, this was only 4 years after he had bought the team, and they won the World Championship, and they were the King of New York, Kings of New York again. And that was really what started it all off. It was that season and the whole Reggie, George, Billy thing that made the Yankees relevant again, because all through the CBS regime of the 60s, the Yankees became irrelevant in New York. And even though the Mets were these lovable losing Mets, they were more popular than the Yankees were.
Talk a little bit about what's happened to him, what's happened to the Yankees.
I would have loved to have actually talked to George at the end of this project and kind of gotten him. There is the last interview that he did, the last print interview in the book, which he did with me, but that was about 4 or 5 years ago. And at that time, he was kind of, we started to reminisce about old times, and I could see that there was something missing there, because he started to not remember things that I knew he really did remember, but they were just gone. They were just gone with him. And this is not the way I ever expected George to go out. I figured George would go out with a bang. He would, you know, be berating somebody and have a massive heart attack or something. During the course of writing this book, knowing this, I'm saying to myself, you know, this is just unbelievable, because the person I'm writing about here doesn't exist anymore. He's alive, but he doesn't exist anymore.
And what about the family? How will they carry on, do you think?
Well, I think they're going to have to sell it, because I don't know exactly all the ins and outs of the tax laws, but I do know one thing. The inheritance tax laws are so prohibitive that it goes to his wife, but after it goes to her, it's just going to be, none of the kids are going to be able to afford to buy each other out. It's going to be worth over $2 billion, this thing, and so the only way I can see it happening is that somebody's going to come in and have to buy the team from the family, and it'll be probably some major corporation or something. Somebody with an awful lot of money.
Bill Madden, Steinbrenner, the last Lion of baseball. Bill, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Okay, my pleasure.